think. All right. Hello, everybody. This is Flares on Films. And this week, we're talking about The Prestige.
Hit the music.
I'm Michael Flaherty.
And I'm Colleen Flaherty. This is a little podcast we call Flaherty's on Films, where we talk about the most magical of films. Michael, what are we talking about this week, and what is it about?
This is a movie from 2006, so this is like not quite iPhone times. And it's a movie called The Prestige, and I'm going to read a definition here. Or not going to define the movie. The movie is like a lot of pictures in a row. Here's the summary of the plot. After a tragic accident, two stage magicians engage in a battle to create the ultimate illusion while sacrificing everything they have to outwit each other. Glenn, have you seen this film before?
I had seen this film probably closer to when it came out. I had
a long time ago. So you were in high school.
Yeah. If you're a big fan of the podcast, as I assume you are, you maybe remember last week I had a negative reaction to this because I remember not liking it and thinking it was very long. And it is actually only 2 hours long. So I liked it better than I remembered liking it, but still didn't care for it. Michael, have you seen this film?
Yes, I think I saw it at my friend Alex's house. But I also feel like I was watching it by myself. So I don't know what the memory is there exactly. Why was I alone in Alex's house? doesn't make any sense. Maybe it was a sleepover or something and I was the only one awake. That would make sense. You know? I'm trying to figure this out.
Let's get to the bottom of this.
Let's get to the bottom of that. But I didn't really remember it. So this is kind of a fresh viewing.
Did you remember the twist?
Yeah. I mean, I basically remembered all the basic plot points.
Sure.
Or I just knew of him.
What did you think of it?
I did not really care for the film.
Well, this is going to be fun for everybody. Well, why don't we go to our first segment while she tells us some cool facts? I can't think of any magic puns.
Magical facts?
But I said magical at the top of the podcast. So I was like, make some facts appear. But okay.
That's pretty good.
Okay, take it again. All right. Now we go to our next segment. Bam.
Time for Sam. She's the real queen of hearts.
This is the part of the show where Sam makes facts appear out of nowhere. Sam, take it away.
In his 1995 novel, The Prestige, author Christopher Priest found inspiration in the legendary feud between two magicians in the early 1900s. Ching Ling Fu was a Chinese magician who was famous for his act of pulling a giant bottle or bowl of water out of the thin air. While touring in the United States, he offered $1,000 to anyone who could recreate his trick. William Robinson figured out the trick, but Fu refused to meet him. So Robinson, offended, decided to move to Europe and completely redo his act. He became Cheng Li Su, the Chinese magician who couldn't speak any English and who had just happened to do the exact same act as Ching Ling Fu. He was a huge success, and the two would constantly be competing like across the street from each other. And no matter what Ching would say, like, hey, guys, he's obviously doing my act. Also, he's not Chinese. No one really cared and just let it happen.
Different times.
Yeah. He would do this for years and would live as Cheng Ling Su. He would hire like interpreters to come and like do his interviews and stuff like that. Like it was a whole thing. But in fact, he would end up speaking English one time while on the stage in Europe. And that was when he was shot during a bullet catching illusion gone wrong. His final words were, oh my God, something's happened. Lower the curtain.
Whoa. That's a great story. I want to see that movie.
So inspired by that, the book came out in 1995. And
I'm sorry. And what time was this supposed to have taken place?
So the actual story was 19... it was the really early, like the first time they met was 1905. He died, I think, at like 1918 or something.
Okay,
like
so that's about the same time this movie takes place. Okay.
Yeah. Actually, you may have noticed, or you maybe had caught on when I was talking about Ching Ling Fu, so the actual Chinese magician, his famous thing was producing this giant ball of
water. I thought of a name for what the book should be called, but it might be racist. So okay. You let me know if it's racist.
Go on.
The Ching Ling Feud? Is that racist?
I don't know.
I don't know.
But I like it.
Okay,
I
go ahead.
It's fine, right?
Okay, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. So his thing was producing the giant thing of water, and they talk about this act in the movie.
They actually, so in the movie, instead of a bowl of water, it's a full goldfish bowl with a goldfish in it. And then yep. Michael Caine says to the two magicians in it, like, see if you can produce this trick. It's not going to be part of the plot summary, so we can bring that up. They never figure it out in the movie, which I think is a cute detail.
Yeah. So that's, okay. So that's supposed to be about this feud, kind of like bringing it back into the film. But anyways, so intrigued by the novel, both Sam Mendes and Christopher Nolan reached out to purchase the rights to the story. Mendes had just been nominated for 7 Academy Awards for his film American Beauty. So basically, we're about to sign rights over to this guy because he knows what he's doing. Then Nolan sent a VHS copy of his film Following to Priest, who watched it and then immediately signed over the rights to Nolan.
I can't get over how much better that book sounds than what they ultimately made, because it's not really like the book then. I mean, it's like the book in that they're two feuding magicians who like do crazy amounts of stuff to compete with each other, and there's one trick.
Let me clarify that the story I told you is the real life story.
Sorry, go on.
The book is very similar to the movie.
Oh, okay. Does the book have clones?
The book has clones, though they're more like husks is how they're described. They're not like fully formed human beings.
So it's like, not like Hugh Jackman could be the clone or could be himself.
Right, because like mentally you're not the,
Is Tesla in the book?
Tesla's in the book.
Does he sing dance, magic dance in the book?
That was so weird when
he
said that.
Does he do it in the movie?
It's a classic Tesla line. It's a classic. You remind me of the babe. What babe? It's like, it's just a super normal thing that Tesla used to say. And then, and then Edison went on to make the Muppets. But was it his to begin with? You know, I think that's how that went down.
So Nolan and his brother, Jonathan Nolan, would work on the screenplay for 5 years. Whenever a new project would pop up for one of the brothers, they would hand the screenplay over to the other to keep working on it. Not only did they have like this really difficult like story to kind of interweave, but they also, you know, you have your three acts for a film. They also wanted to incorporate the three acts of the magic trick into the story as well, so that you have the pledge, the turn, and the prestige.
Can you explain that to the audience, Sam?
I could, because I watched the movie with you, but it's probably not correct. So the pledge.
And do it like Michael Caine. Michael Caine.
I don't know if I can do it like Michael Caine. What? We'll just insert that
three
part
parts
right here.
To a magic trick. I can't do it either.
Yeah. Basically, the pledge is what you're telling them what you're going to do, right? Yeah. And then the turn is when
turn
the surprising
around.
Thing happens. So, right. Like, I cut the woman in half.
And the
but
prestige,
then,
yeah.
The prestige is where you put her back together because you can't
the
just
wow
end.
Fact.
Yeah, you can't just end with this woman cut in half.
I think like, and then in the film, they're like, they're not as impressed when something disappears as they are when something reappears. And that's the prestige of the trick.
So, finally, we're getting towards, let's actually make this movie. So the first actor to be cast was Hugh Jackman. According to Hugh Jackman, quote, "When I met Chris, he hadn't cast either role. I went down and was happy to play either, but after seeing him, he did ask which I would prefer, and I said Angier would probably better suit me. When Christian was cast as Borden, I think our roles really fit us like a glove. Both of them are very good magicians, and as they get on in their careers, they become two of the top magicians going around at the time. Borden is kind of a genius magician and a better magician ultimately than my character, but my character is much more of a natural showman. So
I agree, the casting was good, Hugh.
Yeah. So next he needed his Borden, and he had just wrapped Batman Begins and hadn't even thought of Christian Bale. And actually he said in an interview, I don't know how he got a hold of the script actually, but somehow Christian Bale got the script, read it, and was like, yes, I want to be in this film. So he approached Nolan and was like, I would really like to take on this part of Borden. He said, I was attracted to Borden because he's quite an awkward character who's uncomfortable in front of an audience. And that was a good fit for me because I've hardly done any stage work, whereas Hugh has done a ton of stage musicals. He's really at home on the boards, and it really showed while shooting. He really took to the showmanship. So those two were cast. Michael Caine, so like I said, he did a lot of like, this was 5 years of writing, so it was a lot of going back to it. And he had no one, he wasn't writing for anyone for any specific character. But after he did Batman Begins, he came back, was writing the character, and all of a sudden he could just hear it in Michael Caine's voice. And he's like, yeah, I gotta hire Michael Caine for that part. So that's how Michael Caine got the part. The only one that he knew he wanted to have was David Bowie. So he was like, you need someone who isn't really like an actor, but you need like a celebrity.
Why?
And you need someone who's just like this big, crazy persona, because Tesla was such a like bigger than life idea that you need someone that when you see them, like that's what they present.
So Michael just said the casting was really good. And the way you just described casting Bowie makes sense to me. The way Bowie performed this role was pretty muted, I thought. I don't think he was ostentatious or very David Bowie-like in the role. Like, it was fine.
The reasoning didn't make sense to me.
The reasoning that he's a larger-than-life character?
No, just the idea that they didn't want a traditional actor. That's what
Sam
said.
Like, actors don't know how to do that.
Right, that's an odd thing to say.
Perhaps. Maybe that he just has an attached idea of who he is to him. I don't know.
They said that they needed the larger than life persona because that's the only way it would make sense that he could make a clone device.
I feel like some of this casting is like working backwards. Like, who should we cast? Well, I mean, Michael Caine and Christian Bale are like right here. Like, I'm doing this movie. Let's just do it. And then like, I didn't even think of them for the role, but they just begged me after they read my brilliant script. Like, yeah, yeah. Okay, sure. Sure, Nolan. Sure, Chris.
If I was him, I would always cast Michael Caine. Michael Caine, you can have my word on this. He's going to be in all my movies.
I'm going to hold you to that, Michael.
I don't care if he's dead. He's probably going to die soon.
Aw. No, why?
Because he's old, Sam.
But I'll blue screen in him from other movies.
Michael, I think we need to explain mortality to Sam.
No, it's okay. I'm good. So David Bowie actually declined the role. He didn't want to do it. So Christopher Nolan flew out personally and basically was like, please, you need to take on this role. And upon hearing whatever it was that Nolan said, which was probably how much dollars or whatever, David Bowie's like, okay, I'll take the role. And apparently Christian Bale's mom was very excited. He was quoted as saying, when I told her I was in the same film as David Bowie, she said, oh, finally, you're doing an important film. And I said, well, I have worked with Michael Caine, Morgan Freeman. And she was like, but this is David Bowie.
David Bowie of The Labyrinth.
So although the cast was coming together and start of film was fastly approaching, the script was not completely done. So Christopher Nolan actually got the production designer, Nathan Crowley, to design sets inside Nolan's own garage and to help him with the script, to kind of get an idea of how they were going to film it and what they were going to do and what dialogue they would need. So they ended up having scale models and stuff in his garage set up, and they finished the script on January 13th, 2006, and they started filming January 16th. So 3 days before filming started. To help the actors become magicians, they brought in Ricky Jay, who is considered like the king of sleight of hand, and Michael Weber, who teaches magician skills to people in the film industry. And they have a company that's called Need to Know. And it's very interesting because they only teach you what you need to know. So both Jackman and Bale were kind of annoyed because they would only teach them enough. So by the end, they're like, yeah, like kids were asking us, oh, you can do magic tricks now. And it's like, no, no, I actually don't know how to do that because they got to, you know, magicians got to keep their secrets. Apparently, Jackman said to him, hey, Ricky, can you just teach us a trick, mate? Like a simple card trick, something easy. And he goes, no. I'm not going to teach you that. So
I guess magicians are oddly serious in real life.
I guess so. Yeah.
All right.
The character or the magician, Ricky Jay, was actually in the film. He played the real magician who was on stage when Hugh Jackman's wife died.
Oh.
So that was the guy who actually taught them how to do the tricks.
Neat.
Fun fact I learned while researching this film.
Well, all the facts are fun, right?
All of them. This one, though, super fun. Yeah. So when his wife is dying,
go on.
They break her out of the water tank and then just kind of like let her like kind of flop out. And that's because CPR wasn't invented at the time, which I thought was interesting. Mm. CPR wasn't a commonly used thing until the 1950s and 60s. So,
And then it really helped when the Bee Gees hit.
Staying Alive
came out, and then you knew how many repetitions per minute to do.
You're listening to that song. Wait a minute.
I have an idea. It was like Newton's apple was listening to the Bee Gees.
Staying Alive. Quick, get the paper.
The missing puzzle piece.
So there is a big scene where Sarah and Borden are fighting the husband and wife. You guys will get into it later. And the actress, Rebecca Hall, who plays Sarah, randomly said, it was not written in the script, said, I know what you are. And she kind of kept repeating it. And then she felt so bad after. Like, it was just in the moment. It just happened. And she felt bad. She's like, I just gave away everything. But Christopher Nolan really liked it, so he kept it in. So
cool.
Then while editing this film, the edit actually includes 146 time jumps between flashes backwards or forwards in time, which averages out to one timeline jump every minute of the movie.
That makes me think that people like really liked The Prestige, and Christopher Nolan's like, oh, people like time jumps, do they? Boy, do I have a good idea for a movie. That's a Tenet joke, everybody. I don't think anyone really saw it, but that he plays with time in that.
Did Christopher Nolan do Inception too? Yeah.
Yes.
It's kind of time jumpy a little.
It's dream jumping, man.
Oh, cool. So the movie would be released on October 20th, 2006. It would go number one that weekend and would gross in total $109 million.
Really?
Mm-hmm. It was nominated for 2 Academy Awards for Best Art Direction and Best Cinematography. Did not win either. It is one of 3 films that year that involve magicians, including The Illusionist and Scoop,
which also stars Scarlett Johansson and Hugh Jackman. And it is a Woody Allen film and no one should see it. It's not very good.
My final fact for you guys today, because I do love a good conspiracy theory, before we get to our question of the week, is some fans believe that Scarlett Johansson's British accent is so bad because she's actually an American who's pretending to be British.
Sure.
So that's like a conspiracy theory out there that fans are using now.
Oh, so. I didn't think it was that bad.
I feel like I've heard it either.
I've heard a lot worse.
I felt like there were scenes where she didn't even have the British accent. Like she gave up on it. It was a Princess Leia situation.
I agree, except that it just didn't feel full on in the first place. So it was not
like
that
she was so nervous about doing it. Like she's like only kind of did it.
Yeah, I don't know. It just didn't. I feel like bad accents usually stick out to me a bit more, and that one didn't as much. But maybe you're right, Michael. It was just so lazy.
And she didn't have a lot of lines.
That's also true. She was not an important character.
Yeah, they put her in a box right away.
Wait. And your question of the week. Yeah. We have some magician questions for you.
Ooh, I'm so excited. I know everything about magicians.
What magical tool is illegal in Queensland, Australia, unless you are a magician?
A big saw. No. I don't know. That's all I got. Big saw. That's probably not right. They probably use saws all the time. It's a very practical tool.
An enchanted locket.
A gun! They did gun tricks. Don't laugh at me.
It's actually a pet rabbit.
Oh.
Unless you are a magician and you can prove it, you cannot own a pet rabbit in Queensland, Australia.
We should do that. Rabbits, they get
it. You can't own it unless you can make it disappear. That's very nice.
Also, I had a bunch of them, so I'm you guys.
But I like that was an animal fact and a magician fact. That was good.
Two in one.
Thank you. My other question for you guys is that magician Siegfried and Roy staged the most expensive magic show in history. How much was the cost of their magic show?
$14.
$20 billion. No, okay. $10 million.
What is it?
$35.7 million. Wow. Because of all the wild animals, they had a fire-breathing mechanical dragon and a cast of over 60 dancers and performers.
Jesus.
I have a magic question. Where did Harry Houdini grow up?
Who is that?
Harry Houdini?
Yeah.
Houdini. The most famous magician in the world. Ever,
so he's a magician. History.
He died on Halloween.
He grew up in Appleton, Wisconsin. That's my fact.
Oh, really?
Just like Willem Dafoe.
He claimed that he was born there, but he was actually born in Budapest.
Oh.
So.
All right.
There's a whole museum there.
That was Bam.
Time for Sam. You can cut that Houdini part out. I thought people would know who Houdini was.
I bet they do. I'm just an idiot.
You're Michael, you are so smart. Oh, don't do that to yourself.
Oh, thank you.
God. Anyway, let's see what the critics had to say. Love this movie.
We love
this movie.
What did they think? Yeah.
Here's what Roger Ebert of the Chicago Sun-Times, maybe you heard of him, said. It's quite a movie. Atmospheric, obsessive, almost satanic.
Whoa. It's a lot to think about.
So much.
All right. This review is from Jeff and Wife. Typical guy movie. Competition. Revenge. Whiz bang technology. A buxom babe and skimpy outfits. And oh, did I mention competition? Surefire formula to appeal to guys. Fortunately, I'm not a guy. Jeff and Wife. So this must have been the wife.
Wife. Right.
I bet Jeff fucking loved it. Oh, competition? Sign me up.
Love it. This is from Bob Mandello of NPR. The film is never less than engaging, though, considering that the title The Prestige refers to the moment in a magic act that gives it its wow factor, it's kind of a shame that the ultimate reveal in the movie is a little too tricky for its own good.
Yeah, that's interesting. This reviewer is called Fortune, and here it goes. Not only does this movie last for what seems like 15 years, the extremely talky end scene feels like another 20, which wouldn't be so bad if the movie wasn't a boring downer. The secret of the movie is obvious to anyone over 7, and is even revealed a third of the way through. And yet, it plods endlessly on like a truly bad opera. Not a protagonist among the lot. You're practically rooting them for them all to come to a terrible end. I agree with some portions of that.
I think my favorite thing is apparently I was bitching constantly. I've bitched for years about how long this movie is, that my friend David was convinced it was at least 3 hours long. It is only 2 hours long. It just feels
it
really long.
It does feel a little bit long. Yeah.
This is from friend of the show, Peter Bradshaw, who...
Here we go.
Who speaks to my heart, who just gets me in everything that I feel about this movie.
Oh, wow.
Shall we?
All right.
Bring me Peter
Bradshaw. Christopher Nolan's own prestige takes a knock with this fantastically boring and self-important movie about two stage magicians in Edwardian London. How startlingly dull it all is. The vital elements of wit, of insolence, of light-footedness, and lightheadedness that make magic so compelling are all neglected in favor of a desperately humorless and unsmiling acted contest.
Whew, I knew I liked him. So let's go to our last review, which is about Na King. That's the author of this review. Utterly amateurish production, with the attempts of the two quote-unquote leading characters to play quote-unquote doubles of themselves. So bad that it must have been deliberately so in order to give the movie a tongue-in-cheek, that was quote-unquote, quality. The only saving grace is the ever delectable appearance of Scarlett Johansson without prestige. I don't know if I comprehended any of that. A lot of that was randomly capitalized.
That was, if anyone was wondering about Michael's cadence there, it was just random, all caps.
There's a random comma in there as well.
It's very confusing.
Anyway. So I don't know even what I just read, but I'm sure it was all correct.
That's perfect. All right. So let's go through the plot real quick. I think I can do this really fast.
Whoa, here we go.
Because even though it's a million hours long.
Can I say something before you do?
You may.
Because this is not my favorite film, but here I'll say a good thing about this film is that, and I feel like to me, this is the essential quality. Anybody who likes this film, they like this part of it. This is what's truly good about it is sure. Like the puzzle box script, right? Like there's so many elements in the script that like foreshadow and it's like very cleverly leads up to the end. So there's a lot of, oh shit, our call's going to end in 10 minutes. So there's a lot of little bits and bops that all foreshadow nicely to the end. So that's a sure. compliment, and that's probably going to come up in this plot description, which is why I said it right now.
Okay. So the kind of narrator and cornerstone of this film is probably Michael Caine, who plays an engineer, but like a magic engineer. So like a Disney Imagineer, I assume. And he works as this magician, and then there are these two magicians. There's Robert Angier, who is Hugh Jackman, and Alfred Borden, who's Christian Bale. And they like work for audience plants for this whole other magician. And the lovely assistant in that is Hugh Jackman's wife. And through some perhaps ill-tying knot situation that was Christian Bale's fault, the wife
or maybe
dies.
Not.
Or maybe not.
So
yeah. So Hugh Jackman's like really mad about this. And then they decide to go off and be magicians. And Hugh Jackman's going to take his revenge. And he does by sabotaging a gun trick, which makes Christian Bale lose his fingers. And then Christian Bale's all mad.
He's
so mad. So then later, when Hugh Jackman's trying to be a magician, he sabotages one of his things. And then that's like the plot of the movie is like, so first, that's kind of what their rivalry is like. He thinks he killed his wife. He's not sure and thinks he's overreacting a little bit, like settle down. And then it's sort of a magician competition later on where Hugh Jackman's like really jealous of Christian Bale because he's like a way better magician. And he has this one trick called the transporter man where he can just seem like he instantaneously transports from one box to another. He can't figure out how he does it. Okay. So basically, yeah. So it's and then the other thing is that Hugh Jackman is like super rich and a really good showman. So he's much more successful, which Christian Bale is jealous of. See? All right. Okay. So now we're there. That's basically the crux of the film. And so at one point, Hugh Jackman's obsessed with doing this trick, the transporter man, so much so, Jesus Christ, to say this out loud, he goes and finds Nikolai Tesla.
Can I interrupt you real quick? That Hugh Jackman does try to do his own version of the transporter man, but it's like obviously cheap. Like it's obviously a double. And he makes a point of it that like that Hugh Jackman, when the trick happens, when he transports from one place to another, that he falls under the stage and he's like, he hears the audience clap for the double. He's like, I want to be the man on the stage.
Yeah, and that's important.
That's important.
Also, it was a very cute acting choice where the double is clearly Hugh Jackman, but he's like drunk all the time. And it's, I don't know. I thought that was
great. That was really
I was
good.
Actually one of the most entertaining parts of the movie was like kind of drunk, bitter body double Hugh Jackman.
Yeah.
So anyway, so he goes to Nikola Tesla which I was surprised that he was a character in the book. I can't remember, Sam said, when the book was written, because I remember around this time is when this meme on the internet was really big about how Edison was a really bad guy and like Tesla was the real genius of this time. I mean, I'm sure that's a thing that's been written about before this, but I remember that being a big deal. So it felt a little, like, you know, hemmed in because people were just happened to be talking about that in the middle aughts a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do remember that.
So he's like, all right, Tesla, I figured out this puzzle. So now you need to make me this machine. What is it? It's a cloning machine. So, oh, by the way, I probably should have said spoilers abound in this. So he makes this big magic machine, which we find out later. Well, I guess they do hint at it right away that it's making clones. So he does a transporter man with cloning. And then, oh, by the way, I guess at the beginning of the movie, we do see Hugh Jackman get dropped into a tank and Christian Bale's looking at him drowning. And then we flash. And then at the end of the movie, they do that scene again. And then Christian Bale is framed for murder. And that's what Hugh Jackman was trying to do all along. And then Hugh Jackman comes and gets his daughter. And then, God, this plods on forever. Okay, so like Christian Bale does get hung for murdering. But then, guys, then guess what happens?
Yeah, what?
Christian Bale comes to kill Hugh Jackman. What? We just saw him hung. Turns out Christian Bale was living a lie. He is a twin, and they've covered this up for all these years just so he could do that one fucking goddamn magic trick. Because that, sure. And also the water tank thing, turns out Hugh Jackman was just drowning himself and then making a new version of himself with a clone machine. And for some reason, at the end of the movie, you see like 80 water tanks with dead Hugh Jackman in it. It's like, so you just have an individual water tank every time? did that summary make sense to you? I did hone in at the end. Oh, and at one point, Christian Bale like falls in love with this woman who's like, she's like, someday you love me and you mean it, and some days you don't. And then she kills herself because she's so miserable by this duplicitous man she's with. And then he has a daughter.
It made sense, but I feel like we got to rewind so that we can have some discussion.
Oh, yeah. I just wanted to like get out the basic plot and then we can chat about it.
Okay. What's discussion point number one?
Oh, you're asking me?
Yeah.
Okay. Who's the hottest person in this
film? I think Hugh Jackman. He's my boy. Some would go Michael Caine, obviously.
Obviously.
I bet he was hot, like a young Michael Caine.
I feel like Scarlett Johansson is like a very mid-2000s hot, like a very anachronistic kind of hot.
You know, I wasn't alive in those time frames. I don't know what people looked like.
I won't bring this up again, I promise. But I did see The Illusionist, which was the other magic movie that year. And Jessica Biel is the love interest who I thought would be also too modern looking, but she was great in that movie. I thought she was very convincing. Scarlett Johansson, who I like, I think she's good. She was just sort of kind of nothing in this movie, I thought.
I kind of want to talk. Oh, are you done?
Nope. Yes.
I want to talk about the twists in the end, but I feel like we should probably save that for the end of our discussion. Is there anything else you want to talk about in the film?
Sure. So I want to just reiterate what our very good friend Peter Bradshaw said.
Yeah.
Is no bigger fan of magic than me, friend.
Mm-hmm.
Sam and I once saw somebody make a helicopter appear on a tiny stage. It was one of the best moments of my life. One time I went to a wedding and there was this guy going around just doing card tricks. Sounds lame. It was awesome.
Yeah, but devil's advocate, can you even produce that in a movie because it's all a film? You know that it's all fake. Whereas a magic show, it's happening in front of you.
That's a really good question. I don't think I've ever seen a movie that's like about magicians that I've loved. I thought The Illusionist was a little better, but it was kind of a different kind of movie. I thought Now You See Me is kind of just fun, dumb stuff, but it's fun.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, this is not my favorite tone of movie because I like stupid comedy is my favorite tone of film, but like, this is interesting. Like, self-serious magicians in this era of this time period. I feel like it's a cool, unique vibe.
I guess it's just like a movie that, if you really like, first of all, I should say I am going to be too harsh, like unfairly so, because I just don't like Christopher Nolan very much. I don't like this kind of overly self-serious movie.
You don't like serious men being serious about their job?
With the competition. I'm a lady. I don't get that
with their whiz bang technology.
So yeah, I don't know. It just, I agree with Peter Bradshaw that it just doesn't have any of the delight of magic. It doesn't have anything of what I think is fun about a magic show. And so the central conflict is about this trick. And then the trick is pretty dumb in the end. Like the trick is, oh, I have a twin. And then the other trick is I have a magic machine that makes clones. Like it's kind of dumb.
Yeah, we could talk about that, but what was I going to say? I do like Christopher, because I like The Dark Knight, which you do not, I don't think.
I like The Dark Knight enough. Just
but like that movie has a lot of spectacle. There's a lot of epic moments, and there's a lot of really interesting, well, one really interesting performance. With a lot of character. And
sure, totally.
And I just want to go back to what I was saying before, where it's like, this film, I feel like, is a very clever script. When they say they spent 5 years writing the script, I believe it. Mm-hmm. But I just feel like that's all it has. There's not a lot of humanity in it. Like, okay, I mean, I bet if you like this film, you would object. Like, oh no, it's about these men and their obsession. But I personally, in my personal reading of it, did not feel like Christopher Nolan has anything interesting to say about the nature of obsession. That is just kind of what drives the film and the plot.
Yeah. Would it be jumping ahead to talk about the Hugh Jackman's monologue at the end? Because it's not about the twist.
I'd prefer to save it unless we have nothing else to talk about. It's no, possible.
Okay. Pin in that. Just because I do think sometimes he would be like, well, here's what magic is supposed to be about. But that's not what the movie was about. The movie was about this kind of fun puzzle.
The movie was uncovering. Like, which is like Memento in a way, where the whole movie was kind of like dissecting the movie. But I feel like in Memento, it was constantly more fun to kind of figure out.
Yeah, actually, that's a really good example. Because, like, the movie wasn't really about Guy Pearce. Like, there wasn't much to his character.
No, it's a gimmick mechanical movie.
Right. You knew his motives. You were just constantly figuring out, like, the gimmick. And that was very fun. But this movie, yeah, I didn't... Actually, one of the Amazon reviews kind of nailed it. There isn't really a protagonist you're rooting for. You don't really care about these people. I think it sounded like a normal complaint where I was saying, well, Scarlett Johansson's not anybody, but nobody's anybody in this movie.
Yeah, when Hugh Jackman goes through all that fucking work to frame Christian Bale for murder, like, just shoot each other. Like, that is absurd.
Well, that's actually the whole absurd thing, is like, they're all just doing way too much work to do what? I don't even... To revenge, I guess. To revenge and be the best.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. In the end, is like, who's really the villain? I don't know. Whatever.
Right. It's like, I don't care about these people that much.
I don't care about the high stakes world of magic shows, maybe.
Yeah. And you've really failed if you don't care about that.
Or illusion shows.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry.
Do you have any mid discussion points before we dive into the end?
What does Job call the audience at a magic show?
The how they do dats. How they do dats. Ate it up.
That's good stuff.
It's really good.
I thought it was very beautiful in the way Christopher Nolan films are.
The cinema, what Sam said they might have won an Oscar for, I thought
they
could have.
No, they weren't nominated, didn't win.
Right, for like cinematography and something else. And it was like set design, very good sets. Very really good cinematography. It's like, costumes. Very lovely looking film.
Performances all around were pretty good, other than a lazy accent work. But I actually thought David Bowie, like, it sounded like I was criticizing him. I thought he was pretty good. Like, he seemed like a normal actor to me.
Was he in important films, David Bowie?
Other than The Labyrinth, I do not know.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know. Just so silly. I guess... I like silly, but this movie is very much trying to tell us it is not silly. It is a very serious film about the human condition with the silliest premise. Right?
Yeah. I mean, do you want to talk about the end now?
Yeah. Okay. So first, I just want to to go on what you were saying, like how you don't think Christopher Nolan has anything interesting to say about obsession or humanity. Because at the end, like, he shoots Hugh Jackman. He's like, you never understood what magic was really about. It was about the look on their faces, the wonderment. It's like, is that why we were fucking here this whole time?
I personally don't like this film that much. But most of the time it's like, okay, I get it. I get why people like it. And it feels like a competent movie. That 2 minute window of that speech is the only time where I thought this movie was actively very stupid. Just that is a hilarious fan. Just because it's like so weirdly self-serious and like just
about
how much he loves magic. Oh, and when Christian Bale does his trick and he goes, abracadabra.
Yeah.
That was very
did I fun. Love that though?
No, it's great. I mean, I love stupid things, so it's good for me.
Well, yeah, I guess usually I don't like films that take themselves too seriously. You have to be pretty fucking good. And I guess this is also a sort of a product of our time that we can really go over a film a lot. You know, you don't just see a film once and you're wowed by it and then maybe see it once or twice more. It's just, I really hate being a nitpick, but the whole twist of Christian Bale being a twin is so dumb to me.
Why is that?
So I do agree with you that it's fun. It's fun in the script where they kind of like drop the hints. And then when you figure it out,
right,
yeah. If you figure it out before or when at the end, you're like, oh, cool. Like that's a cool twist. But then you think about the logistics of it. And again, in what is a very serious movie, like if it was a little less serious or a little more heightened reality, maybe that would be fine. But it's so serious that his wife was driven to suicide by his obsession with this trick, this one magic trick. Magic trick. And the whole idea is like sometimes he was his brother who was in love with his wife, and then sometimes he wasn't. He was the brother who wasn't in love with his wife. And I'm just like, then just plan better. I mean, you are planning the kind of subterfuge that nobody knows you're a twin and you can't just schedule better so the one who's in love with his wife is the one who's with his wife.
Yeah. I feel like so, like, again, I feel like the main quality of this movie is the script and its quality and its, like, complexity and its ways it goes through the reveals. But I really dislike both of these reveals. Okay, so when I think of, like, what is a good twist, I think of The Sixth Sense, which
yeah.
One of the things is it, like, totally recontextualizes the whole movie. And you're like, whoa, that makes everything so different. But number two, it's a good movie apart from that. Like you see it after you know the twist. It's like, oh, it's still really, really good. And it's just like, oh, Fallon was also Christian Bale? Okay. Like the guy was like it doesn't matter to me. Like I don't give a shit.
Yeah.
But the second twist really fucking bothers me because it's not a twist.
Oh, just the way he did the trick was the clones that he killed?
Right. So yeah, so in the movie, Hugh Jackman goes, okay, I need this machine that you're making, Tesla. And then we learn that it's a cloning machine. And then in the ending scene, Hugh Jackman goes, I used my clones to do the transported man. And then at the very end of the movie, it's like, he's dying. Christian Bale's walking away and the camera pans over. Oh, what's in the tank? What's in the tank? Oh, it's Hugh Jackman. And you're like, yeah. I know, because he's died. Like, they just described that to me. Like, at no point was I twisted, ever.
Yeah. Can I tell you one moment I did kind of like?
Yeah.
So I think we can both agree that Michael Caine was very good in this.
Well, sure. I mean he just gives exposition, so that's great.
And I like that.
Because he's got a great voice, yeah.
And I like being spoon-fed sometimes. But there's so when earlier in the movie, when his wife dies, they go to the funeral and he says, you know, he had a friend who almost drowned and he described what it was like and it was like coming home. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the movie, when he finds out what Hugh Jackman's doing, he's like, oh, by the way, I lied. He said it was the most painful, excruciating experience of his life. And I just said that to make you feel better. And it was supposed to be some kind of irony because he was drowning himself like his wife, which is also stupid.
Yeah. But
I think it's supposed to be like clever poetic justice kind of thing, but it seemed kind of dumb.
I just feel like not only are the twists lame and not twists, but it's also, yeah, you could just nitpick them so easily if you think about them for 2 seconds, as you've already said with Fallon's bullshit. But then like, yeah, at the end of the movie where we learn that Hugh Jackman has been killing himself and there's like apparently 100 water tanks for each
underneath time. The stage, like not hidden.
Like there's
anything.
No other way to do that.
Oh my God. Remember all his stage hands are blind and that's how he keeps a secret. Like, all right.
Right. Like the script is clever that it thought to foreshadow it. But again, you think about it, it's like, that is so dumb. So that's why I just think this movie is super lame.
Oh, to listeners who've not seen this movie, when Michael says Fallon bullshit, so the way that Christian Bale would hide being a twin is that half the time one of the twins would be in like this full face makeup beard situation, and he would be a guy named Fallon. And that guy the whole time was Christian Bale, one of the twins at any given time. But yeah, again, like a magic show is a whole repertoire. It's not just one trick, you know?
One of the twins
had to cut off his fingers. Jesus.
Yeah, and isn't that so lame in retrospective where like Hugh Jackman was driven to get a better transported man because Christian Bale was doing the transported man in a way he couldn't understand. It wasn't just a double.
But then it was.
And then Hugh Jackman's trick was it was just like another fancy double.
Yeah. but with science magic.
It's like the most obvious way that those tricks would be done is the way they were done.
What did you think of the set design, the Tesla machine?
I thought the set
design was really good.
The sets, the way this movie looks everywhere is awesome, I think.
But like they do this big like retro looking electricity machine, and then they put it away in like this wood cabinet. I don't know. I just thought the design of it was so good.
Oh, the cabinet?
That's actually based off of a real Tesla machine.
Whoa.
Did he really clone people? Is that what you're getting at?
He didn't clone people. It was a way to spread electricity. I don't know. John probably knows.
Sorry, tell your...
I was just going to say that it was actually based off of a real one.
So I was complaining to my friend David about this movie. And I'm like, I don't get why they shoehorn Tesla in. And he's like, well, here's what I think that is. So apparently, like, we all know that, like, Edison aggressively basically destroyed a lot of things Tesla wanted to do. So for one example, like, Tesla did have all these really crazy ambitious projects that nobody knew what they were that never came to fruition because of Edison. So, like, at one point, he bought this huge empty building in New York, and he was going to figure out a way to power the entire state from that building. And nobody knows what he was going to do or how he was going to do it. It was completely shut down by Edison's people. And like people speculate that this could have like changed the way we made our electrical grid. Maybe. Because everything Tesla had done to that point had worked. So it's not like he would just do crazy things and then they'd fail. So I think that's kind of where that comes from. I didn't have any of that context watching this movie. So I guess that's interesting. But he still didn't fucking clone people, probably.
I remember in college, I went to a party and they were smoking marijuana. Whoa. And we were saying like, oh, this guy was super smart. And the guy was so high, he goes, you know who was really smart? Tesla. I just remember laughing like crazy, like right in his face. That's what I think of every time I think of Tesla.
I do. The first time I ever learned about this was the cartoon show The Weekenders, mm-hmm. where they had a statue of Tesla at Tesla Park in that. And that's how I learned it wasn't Marconi who created the radio, but it was Tesla. And then I that's the first time I learned it. So I guess like just the 2000s was a big time for Tesla.
Right.
Lovers.
It's kind of like memes before memes were a thing.
Right. So yeah, I think that's all our feelings about this movie.
But let's put a cap on it. The whiz bang technology was good.
Well, it was real pretty.
It was real pretty.
So real pretty.
Now let's hear from our favorite brother, John. John, are you there? What do you feel about The Prestige?
Right. So I like this movie more than you. Mm-hmm. At least more than Colleen, who I watched it with and kept having to hit because she kept wanting to make fun of this movie.
We do like to talk.
I think my favorite, I mean, I think this movie is very well acted. I liked everyone in it, except for maybe Scarlett Johansson, whose character kind of felt tacked on.
She's very pretty, though.
Yeah, that was nice. But also in a movie where it's, I mean, basically any movie that's set in like 1890s London where it's dark and gritty, like that seems out of place almost.
Yes.
Like you feel like you're in for that industrial Victorian feel. And
John, I use the word
anachronistic.
Anachronistic. I couldn't say it. It was in my head. Michael, I said it right earlier. You have it on the record.
Yes. We'll play it back.
I like that this movie, I mean, neither Christian Bale or Hugh Jackman are good guys or necessarily bad guys. I mean, they both are kind of bad guys, but mm-hmm. I like it when the bad guys have very clear motivations and are not, you know, just caricature. Just
we're all having trouble. Day.
Yeah, blandly evil. Let's go with that.
Yes,
I feel like all of our feelings align so far.
Yeah, but you
sort of like that. I also, I mean, I knew it would be like sort of a twisty movie going in, so I think I spotted the twin thing. Like, I kind of had a feeling with the whole Chinese magician early on, like, oh, that's going to come back somehow. So I was looking for it, and I spotted the Christian Bale twin twist like halfway through the movie, and I like called it to Michelle, and then I felt really smart when clearly like the ending goes on way too long.
So long.
But when I saw that twist coming, I'm like, oh, I see how they're building this up. Oh, it's going to be so cool. And then I was right, and I felt really good. And I didn't see the second twist coming. And
who would see that fucking coming? That he kills his own clones. It's stupid.
Okay. Right. I agree on it being stupid. I thought it was awesome. And because I was so fixated on the first twist, I really liked the second twist. So I felt smart, and then I felt dumb, and that felt awesome. I was all about that.
I like that you're there for the ride, John. That is a good assessment.
Yeah, I will say on rewatch, the end, the third act, which goes on way too long, way too into it, is way harder to watch because you don't have that emotional journey because you already know what's going to happen. Instead of me really focusing on the movie, I'm focusing on people who might not have watched the movie to see how they're reacting to the twists. And that's not a great way to watch a movie.
Especially if you're watching it with us who knew the twists.
Yeah, and like how you guys even kept trying to spoil it for the one person who hadn't seen it with us.
we're jerks.
Yeah, and me just trying to hit Colleen, who just kept wanting to talk over, even though she got very into the middle portion of the movie. Yeah, you're giving me an eyebrow. You were there for that. You were into the movie.
Okay.
Yeah, that happened. Yeah. So I got to say about The Prestige.
Okay.
Well, great.
What grade do you give it?
Yeah.
I think it deserves a B+.
Whoa, that is a high grade.
Nice.
I disagree.
Okay. Thank you for joining us, John. You know what, Michael? I want to answer your question earlier.
Yeah.
Now that I've had some time to think about it. And
Remind me what my question was.
Well, you'll get it when I answer.
Okay.
I think magic, like magician magic, is not a good movie premise, because I agree with you that it's not, there's no, nothing fun or fantastical about it, because movie tricks produce the most basic, you know, they make magic tricks look better. Like when you see Now You See Me, it's just like they're just wizards, right? Like, because you can just do anything with a movie, and that's the fun about magic. It's the like wondering how you did it and seeing it live and knowing what the limitations are of that person. But there's no limitations in a film, so it just isn't that fun. I think that the only time I've ever seen a magician used well is in Arrested Development.
But like, I feel like the behind the scenes, like, it's a fun area to explore narrative wise.
Sure, like a real magician, or like seeing TV shows about magicians. But you know, when they say, like, there's no camera trick.
Even this, I think, is an interesting tone.
Too serious. I don't know.
Yeah.
I guess maybe it could be done well. I've never seen it done well, except after you guys left, after we'd watched the film, we did just watch a supercut of all of Job's. We watched the one where he made the yacht disappear. And they're like, "Why, you made it disappear? That was amazing." He's like, "Oh, magician never, I fucking sank it." So good.
It's really good.
I blew it up. Oh man, my heart was pounding. I didn't know it was going to work. It was just really good.
That's really funny. I still can't get over it, that I don't feel like that last twist is a twist.
Yeah.
Because he explains, because even when he says, "Oh, I killed my clone," it's like, yeah, like that doesn't recontextualize anything. It's like, sure, he cloned himself. He must have done something with clones. Oh, he shot him. Okay.
Well, I think it's that he was drowning his clones. Wasn't that supposed to be kind of the.
But that twist? That's just new information. That's not
I guess.
It's not a twist.
It's not a twist. It is just more information on what we already know. Yeah.
Right.
I see what you're saying. Remember in like when Haley Joel Osment says, "I see dead people," I feel like there's 10 more minutes of the film after that.
That's like the middle of the film, I thought.
Or no, you're right. Sorry. I mean, when we find out Bruce Willis is dead.
Yeah. Yeah. That's very close to the end. I gotta watch the movie again. That's such a good film.
That's really good. So yeah. That's The Prestige.
What do you grade it?
I just think that, I also have a controversial opinion that I don't think this was Christian Bale's best film. I think he's a very good actor. Love him in Newsies. But, we should do that movie someday. I just thought his acting was a little flat in it compared to how good he normally is.
Yeah.
But nobody agreed with me on that, so I'm probably wrong.
No, it's all right.
I'm going to give it a C-. And the grade is that low because of some of my unfair personal preferences. Because, so what if it's self-serious? Christopher Nolan loves that. People love that. I read a very long Reddit thread on Our Movies. And it was comparing The Illusionist to this movie. And I was The Prestige is one of the best movies ever. It was 400 people talking about how great this movie is and why. And I'm So it's just not for me, maybe.
All right. I'm going to give it a C-, but I don't feel bad about it. I think this is a lame movie. Just the fact that it's all about these reveals. And the reveals, to me, are not good. Yeah. I really dislike these reveals. And that's the whole point of the film. It's
I do like what you said. I like the puzzle box of it. You know, yeah. I think it's fun.
It is
fun. I like the callbacks. And then I agree. Yeah, and the third act is really, it's just this is no, thank you, this movie.
So the whole film just feels so hollow to me. It's what is the point? And
oh my God, I forgot about the best part of watching this with you.
What's that?
Is you pointed out. So there's a point in the movie more than once where something will happen and Michael will go, fucking again? At one point, Hugh Jackman interprets the cipher of the diary of the one guy and figures out, oh no, but he knew I was going to get this. And then the same thing happens. Christian Bale does that to Hugh Jackman.
And there's two instances of somebody doing a trick. And then the other one is an audience member, but disguised.
And then they sabotage it.
Yeah, that happens twice in the film.
And every time, fucking again.
But it's also, it's both times, it's what? It's really serious.
How did he think to do this?
So, I don't know. The film is watchable, and it's very pretty, and it's an interesting era, and I don't mind, it's not my favorite tone, but I think it's an interesting tone.
Yeah.
It is clever, and you're when you think about the movie, it's mm-hmm. There's this and this and this. But it just feels what the fuck is the point? If they were to both kill each other 20 minutes into the film, I think I would have liked that better, because then the movie would have only been 20 minutes, which I would have preferred.
It couldn't have gotten that cinematography.
Right. I mean, you would just have to have really nice shots of their deaths. It'd be good.
But you got to be 60 minutes long to get that Oscar nod.
Oh, shit. All right,
that's what I'm saying.
Fuck. All right, who are we sponsored by?
This week, we are sponsored by Etsy.com.
Ooh, if you want to have a fun design of a keychain?
Yeah. If you want your favorite murderer on stuff, there's weirdly a lot of Etsy shops
for
that.
Who's your favorite murderer?
That's a weird question.
Well, you brought it up, I feel like.
I did. maybe keep it close to home with a Jeffrey Dahmer and Ed Gein.
Keep it close up. Root for the
Wisconsin
home team.
Pride.
Sam did not like that.
But yeah, Ed Gein didn't really murder that many people. So
yeah,
it's loser. Is he even a serial killer?
Kind of. You always like to root for the underdog, though.
Anyway, Etsy.com. Root for the underdog?
Root for the underdog. Yeah. They're going to overtake eBay. I feel it.
I feel it. So what are we going to do next time?
We're going to do the SpongeBob SquarePants movie. And stay tuned for that trailer.
And cut.
Meow.
Deep beneath the world's greatest ocean lives a sponge unlike any other. For years, he enjoyed a carefree life.
Hey! Who blew this bubble?
But all that was about to change.
By tomorrow, I will rule the world!
Well, good luck with that.
My crown! Someone has stolen the royal crown! Who can stop me now?
You! Be back here with my crown in exactly 10 days.
He can do it in 9,
8,
7,
6.
That's it!
Five?
Epic chess!
Six it is, then.
Now,
what is it?
The paddy wagon. Sesame seed finish. Steel belted pickles. And under the hood?
Wow.
Yeah. Wow.
He will begin a journey to become the hero he was born to be.
Are they laughing at us?
No, Patrick. They're laughing next to us.
Hooray for SpongeBob!
Get ready.
Let's get it on!
Go for big adventure.
Oh, boy.
How you doing?
SpongeBob! Big Trouble.
Things have gotten a lot worse since you left.
Plankton's turned everyone we know into slaves. Even Gary.
Meow, Plankton.
Big Twists.
Oh my gosh, Patrick, you have a mustache!
So do you!
Oh.
Big Action. And big surprises when Sponge meets World.
Who are you?
I'm David Hasselhoff.
For the very first time.
Hooray!
The SpongeBob SquarePants movie.
Run!